and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Is the West sleepwalking us all into World War III? It sure looks like it. Continued NATO expansion eastward, massive military aid for Ukraine, and the drive to destroy Russia's economy all point to a direct military conflict with Moscow. Did anyone vote for this? Crosstalking the European War, I'm joined by my guest, Sarah Flounders, in Jersey City. She is a co-director of International Action Center. In Tasmania, we have Ted See. He is a conflict consultant and a retired U.S. Foreign Service officer. And in Geneva, we have Alfred Desaias. He is a former U.N. independent expert on international order and author of the upcoming book, Countering Mainstream Narratives, Fake News, Fake Law, and Fake Freedom. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Alfred, let me go to you first. In Geneva, everything I said in my introduction is true, and I end with a question. Did anybody vote for this? Because we seem to be going in a direction that there's no stopping. No one's putting the foot on the brake. Disturbing of all, NATO seems to have no interest in ending the conflict in Ukraine. Actually, just the reverse. One of the reasons why this conflict came about, and I have come across a wide array of opinions about it, which is perfectly fine. I'm open to debate. But was NATO expansion was one of the reasons why Russia acted the way it did. And now NATO expansion is again on the agenda here. I'd like to point out to our viewers, before February 24th, Russia said it would react with military technical reaction. That's still on the cards here, okay? The necessity to have security in Europe is not being discussed. As a matter of fact, it's being discarded. That's a long, long question from me. Go ahead, Alfred.
Well, George F. Kennan, the father of the Marshall Plan, Henry Kissinger, Jack Mackall, all warned about the dangers of expanding NATO. Now, it is profoundly undemocratic to have Finland and Sweden ask for membership in NATO without conducting a wide consultation of the population, because it does have consequences, making sure that the population understands the implications, and then having a referendum. I am both a U.S. citizen and a Swiss citizen. And here in Switzerland, we just had four different referenda last Sunday the 15th of May. And I have not missed a single referendum since I am a citizen. And back in 2002, even Swiss membership in the United Nations, Switzerland was not a member of the United Nations, was put to the vote. And it just made it with somewhat more than a majority. But something as important as joining a military organization, a military organization that, if you know the judgment of the Nuremberg Tribunal, if you know the statute of the Nuremberg Tribunal, Article 9 of the London Agreement of 8 August 1945, there's the concept of the criminal organization. And do the Finns and the Swedes realize that they are actually joining an organization that, because of its history of aggression, war crimes, crimes against humanity in Yugoslavia, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, in Libya, in Syria, etc., very easily could be classed in this special category of criminal organization.
Well, Alfred, let me go to Sarah in Jersey City. I mean, not only is a NATO expansion in the cards still with Finland and Sweden, just in the last news cycle, American officials have said that Ukraine may not even have to go through a induction process. It could be just be made a member of NATO, which would be breaking all of NATO's own rules. I mean, you know, they constantly talk about the rule of law and rules-based order, but they break their own rules all the time. Obviously, Ukraine has a terrible territorial conflict with Russia. Okay, and so what they're doing is they're actually wanting they want the alliance to go into all-out war with Russia because Ukraine and Russia obviously have a military conflict. I mean, no one is talking about this in a logical fashion in the West. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, first of all, Ukraine already is a de facto member of NATO, a U.S. commanded military machine. That's really what it is. And NATO, Ukraine for a long time, its brigades have been involved in the war in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in all kinds of military war maneuvers. And there were thousands of NATO trainers, advisors, as they're called, in the Ukraine. There was equipment just pouring in, really, since 2014. It didn't just begin. So as a de facto member, not voted anywhere, even by the member countries, Ukraine is very much in NATO. And it's the whole purpose of NATO was to expand to the very borders of Russia, to threaten Russia. That's been its purpose from day one. And it was the reason that it expanded ever since the war in Yugoslavia, through the Balkans, through the countries of Eastern Europe, right to the borders. And it's the reason today, without any vote, no democracy about it, expansion of or the inclusion of Finland and Sweden is being considered. Finland, a country of 5 million people, right, pledged to neutrality since World War II, who never paid the price for what they did in World War II if they pledged to remain neutral. And we see that that's just gone by the board. So every step of the way, none of this is democratic for the countries involved. It's certainly not for here in the U.S., where the overwhelming of the majority of the people are against war. And Biden hasn't delivered on any of the promises he made.
You know, Ted, I mean, one of the unfortunate things, during the Cold War, you know, Steve F. Cohen, God bless his soul, he left this too soon because he was such a great thinker and great person, actually, too. And, you know, he prophesied this. He said that the war would be inevitable with the continued NATO expansion. And one of the great things he said is that during the Cold War, which he chronicled very well, he said, at least the Western leadership put themselves in the shoes of the Kremlin. You know, and so, you know, if let's put our feet in the shoes of the Kremlin right now. If there's a conflict in Ukraine. One of the antecedents was NATO expansion. And now two other countries, Finland and Sweden, want to join. I mean, the Russians, obviously, this is a aggressive threat. But no one gives that angle in Western media. Go ahead, Ted.
Peter, I can't recall a campaign of demonization as thoroughgoing as the current one against Russia in Western media. And I want to take a minute and explain my position here, if I may. I was 26 years a U.S. diplomat. I spent more than half my career working with or at NATO. So I'm intimately familiar with the institution and its byways and its quirks. Now, as a retired diplomat, I'm a great believer in Winston Churchill's phrase that jaw-jaw is always better than war-war. And for that reason alone, I do not condone Russia's operations in Ukraine. But given the level of provocation, especially the hypocrisy that NATO has displayed, I certainly understand them. First, Zelensky goes to the Munich Security Conference in February and talks about rolling back Ukraine's decision to get rid of nuclear weapons. Second, despite all the fact checks that have appeared in Western media, U.S.-funded biolabs in Ukraine are a reality and have been since the Nunn-Lugar Cooperative Threat Reduction Program went into effect 30 years ago.
Yep.
Now, 30 years ago, it might have made sense for NATO, the U.S., and Western countries to help former Soviet states like Ukraine to do away with its WMD stockpiles. But what those labs are still doing in operation 30 years later beggars the imagination.
Oh, yeah.
So what Ukraine has done is they've handed Russia the same exact excuse that the U.S. and its allies used to invade Iraq in 2003, which is WMD counterproliferation. Now, point three, there's an ongoing military humanitarian crisis in the Donbass, has been for years now. People have been getting shelled and killed willy-nilly without almost any reporting in the Western media. But this has also the same exact excuse that NATO used in 1999 to conduct a war over Kosovo. humanitarian intervention. So if it's good enough for Bill Clinton in 99, and it's good enough for W in 2003, why isn't it somehow good enough for President Putin to exercise these same authorities in 2022?
Well, I mean, I'm glad you bring that up because, Alfred, I mean, we've essentially, with these kind of low-octane thinkers in the West, you know, I mean, they're all over the place. Liz Truss, you know, Anthony Blinken, all of these people here. They want us to know that we're on some kind of war footing. Well, the Russians might actually take the same attitude as well. I mean, how is it that Nancy Pelosi can waltz around the center of Kiev during a military conflict with Russia, okay? Because the Russians are not targeting it. They're not interested in it at all. But at one point, they might. Go ahead, Alfred.
Well, you addressed the issue of a rules-based international order. You addressed Blinken and Biden. Now, here it is. We have it, the United Nations Charter. And what has NATO done? What has the United States done? We have not only violated Articles 1 and 2 of the Charter, we have violated the spirit of the Charter, not only the letter. Article 2, paragraph 3 of the Charter requires that we negotiate in good faith.
Right.
Now, Putin has been negotiating, trying to reach some sort of a peaceful solution to the Donbas problem since the coup d'etat against the democratically elected Yanukovych in Ukraine, which we co-financed, as we know, from Victoria Nuland. Now, 8 years of negotiating, 8 years of seeing Petroshenko and Zelensky violate the Minsk agreements 1 and 2 systematically. And then in December last, Putin puts on the table two moderate treaties, which are then dismissed by Stoltenberg and Biden and
Alfred, I have to jump in here. We have to go to a hard break, and after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion on the European war. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the European war. Okay, let's go back to Sarah in Jersey City. There seems to only be one gear in play here, and this is to move forward with a conflict. And what I find so very peculiar is, number one, what does winning mean in this conflict? I mean, I don't even want to even go down that path. I mean, I think these people have no idea of the dangers that they're creating. Number two, even at this stage of the conflict, that should have never happened in the first place, Western publics and consumers are being affected. I'd like to, you know, we've talked about on this program the conflict in Iraq and Syria and Libya and all that. Well, that really didn't affect the Western citizenry very much. This is beginning to really pinch a lot of people here. And there seems to be no easing down and even willing to sit down to talk. I mean, we have the French, the Italians, and the Germans saying, you know, maybe we should talk about negotiations while pushing more sanctions. Well, that's not how negotiations work. So, Sarah, I mean, this is why I'm so depressed and worried, is that they think something is winnable. I don't know what that means, because that could entail annihilation of everyone. Go ahead, Sarah.
Well, what does winning mean to U.S. strategists and war planners? It really means, can they break the relations, the trade relations, the economic exchanges between the EU, especially Germany, and Russia? Could they do this through war and the demand for sanctions? We shouldn't forget that Biden promised nuclear war if the sanctions weren't voted, said it's World War III or it's sanctions. So from the very beginning, it's been how to break the economic relations, and it has come back and hit with a vengeance on the countries of the EU here in the U.S., globally in terms of famine, literally in Africa. When you have spiraling inflation, rises in energy costs, it is a war that has already reduced Ukraine from the most prosperous country at the time of the division of the Soviet Union, the most prosperous of the republics, to today the poorest country in Europe. And the war is now making the EU, they're really paying the price. As they say, folks in Britain have to choose between heating and eating. Now, how has Russia fought this war? They fought it very differently from the U.S. In the U.S., from day one, Iraq, Afghanistan, anywhere in the world, they knock out the water, the sanitation, sewage, the food warehouses, the internet, all the communication systems, day one, and they advertise it, they push it. The hospitals, the medical centers, that's what's destroyed. That's not what's happened in the Ukraine. The bakeries were still open in Kiev. Internet, that's how world politicians from Pelosi, EU folks are all able to visit Kiev. Isn't that unusual in a war? But Russia is fighting this in a very different way, very much against the Nazi fascist forces that have been organized right within the Donetsk. So we should see the differences in how the war is fought, the aims in it, and the U.S. aims, which are to completely use Ukraine as a pawn in order to ensnare Russia in a war that they want to have continue. It's in Russia. Interest, and they are trying to reach a negotiated solution to end this war with the end of the Nazi domination and firing within East Ukraine.
You know, Ted, what, you know, I guess the, you know, I agree with much of what Sarah said. I mean, the prize is actually hegemony in Europe. Ever since the end of the Cold War, even during the Cold War, any kind of German, Soviet / Russian rapprochement was something the Washington always worried about. That's why they always hate social democrats in Germany, just like they have Sergeant Schultz now in Germany. But, you know, what is the prize of Europe if there's productivity goes down, unemployment goes up. I mean, social infrastructure is destroyed. I mean, it's kind of a cheap third prize ribbon, isn't it? I mean, just to have hegemony and to punish Russia. Well, Russia can look elsewhere, okay? Russia's existence isn't dependent on its relationship with Europe. Go ahead, Ted.
Peter, you're being grossly unfair here, and you're asking me to sort of explain Bidenomics, and it's a mystery to me. I don't know if anyone's capable of explaining what that man is up to, other than printing money at light speed. If in the process he can destroy Europe's economy as well, and possibly, you know, maybe his vision is a smoking economic ruin from the Atlantic to the Urals. I'm not sure. But seriously, we've got a situation where Sweden is looking at abandoning its traditional, its distance from any war, its stance, like Switzerland, as a non-aligned country, even in Europe. And it's looking at throwing that away. Finland has been neutral, aggressively neutral, ever since the end of World War II. They're not stupid. They were right on the border with the Soviet Union. They wanted peace. They didn't want to be any part of a political military alliance that's a lot more military than it is political. And now, in the current situation, because we've got this focus on the democratic pure haven of Ukraine, and never mind that it's a semi-criminal enterprise and has been for a long time, we're all going gung-ho toward war for no apparent reason. But for that matter, NATO shouldn't exist. So,
yep.
You know, we're talking about something expanding that hasn't had a reason to exist since 1991.
Yeah, I found Biden's policy. So Biden, who ran the Ukraine desk during the Obama administration and where his son worked at Burisma, the U.S. is sending money to people that paid people like his son. It's very kind of peculiar relationship. Alfred, obviously we're running out of time here. Is NATO really kind of pushing to see if they can test Article 5? I mean, it seems like a game of chicken here, okay? But, you know, if they want to push Article 5, so let's say something happens, you know, there's a missile system that the U.S. puts into Finland. Russia reacts, and then they have invoke Article 5, and then they have their friend in Turkey, Erdogan, says, I'm not involved in this, okay? Then the entire myth of Article 5 of the NATO treaty is blown up. Your thoughts?
Well, I think that, as Ted also said, there's no raison d'etre for NATO. NATO and its claim of full spectrum dominance is a crime against humanity in itself. It is a threat incompatible with the UN Charter. Article 2, paragraph 4 of the Charter prohibits not only the use of force, but it prohibits the threat of the use of force. And as Pope Francis very correctly said on the 3rd of May, NATO's barking at the door of Russia. NATO actually provoked this tragedy, and that has been carried by the mainstream media. Mainstream media is complicit in this tragedy because they have been actually conducting propaganda for war and demonizing the enemy. By the way, contrary to Article 20 of the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, that the United States and United Kingdom and France and Germany are all parties to.
Okay, let me go to Sarah here in Jersey City. Sarah, I mean, on this program, from December 17th all the way up to the conflict on February 24th, almost every single program I made on those two proposals that the Russians sent out, one to NATO, one to the United States. And of course, we all know the reaction. Now, I mean, these are not good faith actors. I mean, those were good faith. You can call them ultimatums if you want. Okay, fine. Okay. But that was a point of reference. I mean, I when I look at, you know, we have a call for a ceasefire by Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. I mean, I wouldn't believe anything. I would probably believe a used car salesman more than I would believe the Defense Secretary right now. I mean, this is really, you know, it's almost impossible even to wind this conflict down because you don't know who to talk to. And the people that you might talk to aren't good faith actors. This was done by the West. Go ahead.
This is about money, about super profits, and everything else has flown out the window, including Build Back Better in the U.S. $40 billion in the last congressional appropriation, along with all the money that was already flowing in, $1 billion here, $3 billion there. So much of it goes missing, as we well know, in every U.S. war. Literally, it's delivered on the tarmac and it's no longer there. Now, what was the war meant to do, along with the super profits that come from war? Because the U.S. economy is first and foremost based on war, on endless war, on super profits to the military industries. But it was also because German investment in Russia was 10 times the U.S. investment in Russia. Their trade with Russia, 10 times what U.S. trade was, their German trade with the U.S. So how does the U.S. break this, turn it around, smash it? And they are willing to smash the EU, absolutely, who is both a competitor and an ally, and use the NATO military machine to do it. So they're
Sarah, let me jump in here. I want to give Ted the last word here. Ted, the cynic in me says the Pentagon and the military industrial complex, they need a replacement for the Afghan grift. And the Ukraine is the substitute for the grift that they lost in Afghanistan. 40 seconds. Go ahead.
I absolutely agree. But I want to make one quick point about NATO, Peter, which is that it does operate by consensus. And that may seem like just lip service, but it is a fact that if Ankara wants to break consensus on, for example, Sweden and Finland joining the alliance, they can do so, and no one can stop them.
Yeah, but Ted, while we have the time, hang on. Since we have the time, don't you think that Erdogan just wants to make a deal? That's what he always does.
Of course.
That's it. Yeah.
Of course. Let's make a deal, and he's going to do it on the most favorable terms he can by extorting the whole alliance.
Okay, well, you know, extortion, blackmail, all these things are associated with NATO here. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Jersey City, Geneva, and in Tanzania. And I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.